Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. And we find ourselves on the cusp of an elimination race and a rare Saturday night affair under the bright lights of Bristol. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst and my esteemed colleague, Chris Wormy. And Wormser, two playoff races down, and we have yet to find a playoff driver grab the checkered flag.
I mean, is this just a testament to the new car? I mean, the goal was to try to level the playing field, and it's the first time we've ever seen it happen when it comes to Eric Jones. And then you see it, you know, the following week with Bubba Wallace, where a non-playoff driver wins a race. So definitely difficult to handicap this stuff right now, I think.
NASCAR definitely has to be thrilled with the parity that we've seen. Obviously, they'd like to see their playoff drivers going front and center, but alas, the only driver that has his ticket sealed into the round of 12, of course, is Christopher Bell, much to the delight of you, myself, and all our loyal Stay Green listeners out there. And for those folks who may just be tuning into the Stay Green podcast for the first time, we break this up much like a NASCAR race. Stage one, we recap what we saw at the track last weekend and what we can take from that going forward. Stage two, it's all about gambling, the mechanics of building a race card, creating that honest assessment of things we did right, things we did wrong. And last, but certainly not least, stage three, the most pivotal of all, we preview the drivers, track comps, track specs, everything you need to pick a winner this weekend. And note to those new NASCAR fans, this race goes Saturday night, not on Sunday. So if you're tuning in Sunday morning amid your NFL handicapping, we'll either look like geniuses or we'll look like jackasses, something that we've grown accustomed to over the years. But Bubba Wallace, no doubt, gets to the winner's circle at a price tag of around 30-1 on race day. We see him drive the 45, the same 45 that Kurt Busch drove to victory lane at Kansas earlier in the year. Ultimately regained the lead after the final green flag stop and led the final 40-plus laps. And like you mentioned, second non-playoff driver to win a playoff race. When you look at what Bubba is doing, I mean, he has been arguably the most consistent driver. And sometimes, my friend, as much as I lean on you and you've taken me by the hand and taught me all about NASCAR, you came on this very podcast about this time last week and said, I think Toyotas are going to be very good. I'm pretty sure Toyotas finished, what, four out of the top six spots for the race in Kansas?
Well, they were the fastest cars. Especially long run, I don't know exactly how they finished, but I mean, outside of the 48 car in those short run speeds, I mean, the Toyotas were the fastest by a mile.
Yeah, they definitely look like they put it all together. Denny Hamlin, of course, brought speed. Bubba Wallace wins the race, and you've had a number of other Toyotas perform exceptionally well, with the exception of the 18 car of Kyle Busch, who maybe now with the new race team will be able to get it all under control. But when you look at the playoffs, and obviously we've seen a little bit of chaos, did Bubba's run surprise you when you went through some of the practice numbers and you tried to put together a race card for the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt that when Bubba looked at the camera and said that'll, you know, shut a lot of people the hell up or something, he was talking to me. He could have just addressed me personally and said, hey, Worm, that'll shut you up. Because I've been a critic of him. And it's not that I think he's a bad driver. He just hasn't produced the finishes. I mean, he was definitely good in Xfinity and trucks. And now he's got a real opportunity in a car that, you know, the Toyotas are fast right now. And that includes 23XI. And, you know, just, I have to get past my, you know, Bubba can't win. And it's cost me money this year. And listen, outside of like Watkins Glen and I mean, his finishes are great. You know, you look at those last like 10 races, maybe the only guy better has been Bell. So, I mean, it would have been interesting if there was a caution, because I do think that Bowman on the short run was had a lot of speed. But you know what? I got to hand it to him. It wasn't just that stop on pit road. I mean, he picked up a second on Bell and Hamlin just on the driver's side of the green flag pit stop. I mean, that's not easy. And that was not an easy pit stop for him. So, you know, hats off to Bubba. And, you know, if I see him have a fast race car and he's around 20-1, that might be an investment for me.
Yeah, he's gone out there and earned it, and I think a lot of these drivers, some that we had questions about coming into the season, some are getting much more comfortable with the next-gen cars, and we're seeing the results pay dividends on the track. Bubba, congrats to those folks who were able to cash that ticket at 30-1. But, you know, we're focused on Toyotas. I mentioned that they finished 1-3. Truex comes in fifth. There is an HMS car nestled in there at fourth. Christopher Bell locks himself into the next round of the playoffs, the only driver that can say that. Of course, there are other drivers who basically have to start, run 15 clean laps, and they'll punch their ticket through as well. But you look at the odds board, Worm, and we still see Chase Elliott the favorite at most sportsbook, anywhere from 4-1 on the high end, as low as 2.5-1 at some shops. Should we be talking more about the 11? I know the one thing missing from his NASCAR resume is a series championship, but if he gets his pit stops under control, and he did become his own worst enemy again at Kansas, probably could have won that race otherwise, should he be that driver that we fear going into Phoenix, that he's showing speed and a race-winning car nearly every week?
Well, I think he's the favorite from a speed perspective. I don't even think that hasn't been questioned, you know, in the last, you know, maybe 8 weeks or so. I mean, that team just unloads well. Now, with the exception of the road courses, and, you know, that might come back to bite him a little bit next week, or in the round of 12. But as of now, I mean, I expect Denny Hamlin, this is the same thing every week. If Denny Hamlin unloads well, and he just can keep his mistakes to a minimum, he's going to be right there. And I think that's almost week in and week out. Obviously, he was really good at Texas for the All-Star race. You know, Talladega and Charlotte will definitely be big question marks for him. But, you know, if he goes out and does what he needs to do at Texas, he'll probably be sitting pretty comfortably into that round of 12. And then, you know, mile and a half tracks with Vegas and Homestead. I mean, Toyotas are dominant there. Martinsville was a struggle for him, but, you know, he'll be good at Phoenix too. I think that, you know, I think you have to make the 11 the favorite. However, you know, they've made some mistakes, but fortunately they've made them early in races, and he's been able to recover quite nicely. You look at, and his mistakes haven't hurt the car. Like, the difference between him and Kyle Busch, when he spun out, he obviously did a little damage to his car. He wasn't able to work his way back up through the field, whereas Denny Hamlin's making these mistakes on pit road, but he has enough speed and talent to kind of get up there in the front, and it's paying dividends for him. And I think he should be the favorite, but, you know, these betting markets, you know, they react differently to – they think differently than me sometimes. And if there's a lot of action on Chase, then I understand that.
Hey, it's all about creating opportunity. And when you look at the 11 right now, you mentioned his level of consistency. Over the last six races, he has four finishes of fourth or better. If he's able to replicate that, clean up some of those things that have ailed him on pit road, he no doubt will be the guy to watch over the next seven races until we crown a champion. But when you're talking about Toyota, and obviously you kind of alluded to the direction I wanted to go, and we look at the current playoff standings, the four drivers right above, or three drivers, I should say, right above the cut line, Daniel Suarez, Tyler Reddick, Austin Cindric, they're going to need a good performance to punch their ticket to the next round. The four drivers below them, Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, Chase Briscoe, and well below them is Kevin Harvick, given how his two first races have gone. The Harvick, it's win and get in. That's the only chance for the four. But when we look at those six drivers, essentially vying for three spots, this has been a track where Kyle Busch is extremely confident, and we'll get to his breakdown and what he's been able to do here before. But if I'm looking at the other five drivers for two spots, are there guys that you think have shown pedigree or that you have a little bit more confidence in? Because I'm not sure we're going to have a chance for a full-blown deep dive when we get to stage three.
Yeah, I'm not sure on Trackhouse, right? So I don't know where Suarez is going to land on this whole deal. You know, they could unload like rockets. I actually think that they'll struggle more so than actually unload fast like they have earlier in the year. You know, I think that right now Dylan, Briscoe, and Cindric really are kind of, I think, obviously Harvick. Well, we're not going to skip that. Like, Harvick needs to win, but I think Cindric, Dylan and Briscoe, they're going to need some help. I think if any one of those drivers that has like maybe some value on the upside would be Reddick, just because I think that high line and diamonding in the corner actually works out to his driving style a little bit more. Obviously, Kyle Busch is going to get up there. Like, I think if he doesn't have any issues, and even if he has issues, as long as he has them early in the race, I don't see the 18 having an issue getting in. But I do think if you're a Cindric, Dylan, although he is pretty consistent at this track, he's probably going to need a little bit more. But I think that Reddick probably is sitting the best out of those cars. That is Suarez, Cindric, Reddick, and Dylan and Briscoe.
Going to be fascinating to watch, and I think that's what this format lends itself to, is plenty of playoff drama. You can't really do much necessarily to secure passage, other than if you're the top four or five drivers. I mean, everybody has to go out there and avoid disaster, and these guys will have to do their best job to race themselves in. You mentioned Alex Bowman a little bit earlier, and I wanted to come back to revisit the 48. He did lead a race high, 107 laps at Kansas. And when you look at the way Bowman and Byron have raced, specifically in relation to HMS, I don't think it's a reach to say that those guys have been better through the first two playoff races than what we've seen out of Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson.
I think without question. I mean, they went out there and led laps and were super competitive. I mean, there was no question that Bowman was the fastest on the short run. And where did that come from? I mean, that's the thing about NASCAR, is like, oh, all of a sudden we just kind of find a setup, or we figured something out, and now there's speed. And let me tell you this, if the 48 has speed in the car, they find victory lane. He might be a hack, but he's a hack that has a lot of, checkered flags. So I don't know. It kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I knew that Hendrick was kind of going to be the next best behind the Toyotas, but I didn't anticipate the 48 leading the most laps and having as many fast laps as he did.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly Chase Elliott, who had been the model of consistency during that middle portion of the summer schedule, has two playoff races where he's finished outside the top 10. Kyle Larson, 12th at Darlington, 8th at Kansas, never really had what I would call a race-winning car by any stretch of the imagination, where Byron and Bowman, at least if things broke the right way...
Those are bad finishes for Kyle Larson, by the way.
Oh, there's no doubt. It tracks where he should be doing significantly better.
I mean, that's as bad as he can do. I mean, if you're that five team and you're looking at just your production so far in the playoffs, you have to be really stunned, because those are two tracks that should be really, really good for that team. And man, he was barely a top five car at Kansas, and he wasn't a top, I don't even think he's a top eight car at Darlington. So I think that, I'm not saying that this is a time for them to press the panic button, because they do have, if they make that round of eight, obviously I think there's a good chance they do. They do have some opportunity there to be productive. And obviously at Phoenix, it could come down to a final pit stop. But I'll tell you what, that five team is not anywhere near where they were last year. But they're still kind of priced that way at times for outright. So maybe some value against him. I'm not saying that this week, but potentially throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah, you mentioned the pricing, and we talked obviously a little bit about Chase Elliott being the favorite, Denny Hamlin behind him, Kyle Larson widely available at 7-1 to win the playoffs, Joey Logano behind him in that 8.5-9 range, Ross Chastain price still not exactly indicative of the kind of cars the one is bringing to the track every single week, but I think there's significant liability from earlier in the year when you could have had Chastain at 60-1 or better. You see him in single digits, and Christopher Bell, the beneficiary obviously of having secured his place into the round of 12. I'd be doing a disservice, though, Worm, to all of the NASCAR fans that are out there if we didn't talk about one of the biggest storylines that became official this week. And no, I'm not talking about the release of the 2023 NASCAR schedule, which didn't have any major changes. It'll be great seeing the All-Star race in North Wilkesboro, the playoff format. Same 10 races, same sequencing, same order. And I think it's a credit to NASCAR figuring out how to break up short tracks, road courses, intermediate tracks, super speedways, and everything else. But Kyle Busch finally knows where he's going to be racing, and it's taking over the 8 car at RCR Racing. And I have to say, Mr. Childress did not have the ability or did not want to mince words as it pertained to Tyler Reddick. And I quote, "I just told him we had a contract to race next year, and I'll talk to him later about keeping him posted on how it's going and what we're going to be doing, how we're going to put it together." Tyler Reddick, your days of being in a race-winning car, at least at RCR, are probably behind you, but Kyle Busch makes the move over to join Austin Dillon at RCR.
Well, this is an elite driver for RCR, and I'm not saying that Tyler Reddick, is or isn't, but I'll tell you right now, Tyler Reddick ain't Kyle Busch yet. And this will be
very few drivers are Kyle Busch. Right, that's not sugarcoated here.
Yeah, I mean, I know that he can be hated by a lot of people, but I'll tell you what, he'll make your team better. And I think if you're Austin Dillon, you have to be excited about this. You have someone that owns a truck team and knows what it takes to win races. I mean, the guy's won more races across all three series than anybody. He's only going to make them better. Now, you're going to have to deal with him bitching, and sometimes that can be hard. And I think that's maybe, along with the progression of Ty Gibbs and, just maybe Coach Joe Gibbs was just kind of like, if Kyle can be a real pain in the ass sometimes, and you lose a sponsorship and you're a pain in the ass, well, we're probably going to get rid of you. So I think everything makes sense. I don't want to speculate on whether TRD should have done something more to keep Kyle Busch, or were they trying to get rid of him. Listen, I think it's great that maybe things get a little spiced up. I would love for there to be a little Tyler Reddick RCR beef next year and Kyle versus Joe Gibbs beef next year. I think that's good for the sport, and as long as it stays healthy and it's just remains competitive, it'll give us a storyline every week. And I'm excited. It'll be interesting to see Kyle Busch not in that 18 M&M's Camry, that's for sure.
Well, with one to go in stage one, I do want to ask some of the trickle-down effect. And we, of course, don't spend a ton of time talking about the other series out there, whether it be the Xfinity or trucks, which, by the way, we do have a triple header weekend at Bristol. By the time that this podcast goes live on Friday, we'll already know who's won the truck race, so there's no reason to speculate anything there. But what do you think this means for Kyle Busch in terms of the truck series? I mean, obviously, he's got to work with Chevrolet. TRD is out of the mix. But I did find the other unique wrinkle, knowing how big a fan you are of the Indy 500. That Kyle Busch just happened to sneak that clause in, that he'll have a chance to join his brother potentially doing the Indy Charlotte double at some point over the next handful of years.
Oh, that would be awesome. I would love to see Kyle Busch go mix it up in the Indy 500. I mean, that's the one driver I think that could go out there. You could put him in anything with four wheels, him and Kyle Larson, and they're going to be competitive. And they might start off slow, but towards the end of the race, that guy's going to be making hay. And I'm super excited about that. That'll be great. From a truck perspective, Toyotas have been really good. So, listen, he's not going to let his team struggle. If the equipment's not there, it's only a matter of time until it gets there. So, I think that'll take care of itself. More importantly, Kyle Busch has a paycheck, and I imagine it'll be a nice one for him. So, he can at least keep that team funded and keep good drivers in those vehicles.
Should be interesting to see. It's always fun to speculate on silly season and what the ramifications are both on and off the track, and we'll see one of the top drivers in the sport changing race teams for the upcoming season, and we'll see if he makes RCR even that much more competitive than what we've seen out of the 3 and 8 cars so far this season. You can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And Worm, as we go on to stage two, we're not done with Kyle Busch talk just yet. I have to ask the question that I think is weighing on a lot of people's minds, knowing that Kyle Busch has announced where he's going to be taking his talents for the 2023 season and beyond. Does it change how you handicap the 18 as long as he remains in the playoff picture for this year? And I guess the ancillary fallout, the 8 as well.
Well, so I think from this perspective, as trying to find an edge, or will I treat the 18 differently, I actually will treat where he's sitting in the playoffs, that'll take precedent over something like this. I mean, I think these were business decisions, not necessarily driver decisions. It's not like Joe Gibbs thought that Ty was going to be better than Kyle Busch. That's just not the case. So now, does he want to stick it to them or maybe I don't know. I'm not going to factor it in too much, just because, they got what they got. And these guys are competitive, and they want to win week in and week out, whether they have a good car or a bad car. And I don't know that there's any extra motivation there to do something different when there's still a championship to win this year. I think it'd be awesome to see those guys both kind of make the final four and be racing for teams that they aren't going to be racing for in the next season. I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, you'd have to love that, especially keeping the existing sponsors happy, knowing that those sponsorship agreements and relationships wouldn't carry forward, especially when you're talking about M&Ms and what they've meant to the 18 car over the years. We knew that they were pulling their dollars away, and a big portion of why this trickle-down effect started, and we've seen some drivers switch race teams. You mentioned it kind of at the top of the show, but unfortunately, good or bad, we have to revisit it. Our pre-week stuff on Stay Green has been phenomenal. Top 10 picks, you've read the board perfectly. Our stuff on race day hasn't exactly been up to our high standards. We know there are ebbs and flows that come with sports betting in general. When you look at the first two races of the playoffs, are there things that have gone differently than you expected? Or what do you think has contributed to some of the uncertainty that we've seen with good drivers having a lot more problems that we chronicled after Darlington? And I don't think a lot of that changes in the wake of Kansas.
Well, you brought it up. I think you sent the message right after the race, like, hey, don't take this the wrong way, but you said Toyotas were going to be fast. Why the hell did we fade them in two matchups? And I'm like, huh, that's a good question. A buddy of mine on Twitter, Ryan Stevens, he doesn't even like to fade teammates because he thinks that they're so equal. And I never thought that until this year. I really do think that, you know, there's races where, like, the Fords have been great and the Toyotas have been great or the Chevys have been great. And in the past, I still think within those organizations or within those manufacturers, there's been guys that have been better than others. And this year, it just seems like that gap is much smaller. And I think it's time for me to take a look at and say, maybe if I think the Toyotas are going to be fast, there's no reason that I should be out there trying to fade one of them, or maybe the worst one, or the one that looked the worst in practice. Because that's what I did when it came to Denny Hamlin. I faded him with Kyle Busch. And now, when Kyle was good, I thought he was better than Denny. But you know what? Denny was a second place car. What am I doing fading a car that could be second place? You know, that's ridiculous. If I thought that was going to be I knew Denny was going to be decent. I didn't think he was going to be as good as he was. But I have to sit here and say, if I think Denny's a top five car, why the hell would I fade him with Kyle Busch? Why would I not take Kyle Busch top five or take him to win the race? Because that's what it's going to take for him, for us to cash a ticket. And then I'm taking, you know, like a plus 105. And yeah, I got to get better at that. And I'll tell you this, when it comes to the chase, I think these guys are
the playoffs.
The playoffs. yes, the playoffs. I think that these teams are pretty happy Bubba Wallace is not in the playoffs. And I cannot believe those words just came out of my mouth.
I mean, it's something honest. His current form is better than anybody else, and we're seeing Toyotas bring speed. We've talked about it until we're blue in the face with some of these young drivers, and we know how talented they are, that confidence breeds confidence. And what I mean is you string together a couple good performances, you're unloading with a race-winning car more often than not, you believe you can go out there and rub elbows with the best. I mean, it's like any sport or anything else out there. When the confidence is there, you can accomplish superhuman feats, and Bubba right now is showing some of that promise and that pedigree there that I think when you look at him, the same thing that we said about Martin Truex Jr. coming up 3 points short of getting into the playoffs, that if you were the 16 playoff drivers, you had to be thrilled that the 19 wasn't going to factor into the playoff calculus. And we're seeing that first and foremost. Darlington, of course, he had an engine malfunction, but he had a race-winning car last weekend at Kansas, which I think gives us a logical opportunity. And by the way, I give you a ton of credit because I think, you know, enough bettors don't look themselves in the mirror and admit, hey, look, we made mistakes and we went about our handicapping. You have to go, all right, what did I do right with this process? What did I do wrong? Was it luck? Was it bad handicapping? And I think that's a valuable lesson because you and I have gone back and forth when it comes to betting head-to-head matchups, and there's no perfect formula for it. Do you bet on good cars or do you look to bet on bad cars? And obviously, it's splitting the difference to try and find the middle. You'd love to bet against bad cars with good cars. You just don't oftentimes have that luxury in the head-to-head market.
Yeah, and you know what? It's one of those things where this season, I feel like more than ever, there's been like penalties and mistakes. I would say that there's been like less wrecks with the leaders or less damage on cars that are leading the race. But man, it's amazing how just teams have thrown races away. And I mean, I don't want to get too stuck on Truex from last week, but that was one of the fastest cars we've had all year. And no one's even talking about how fast he was. He was worth a small fortune for me. And, you know, he went to the rear, and then let's see, I wrote down like where he went to the rear last week. he went to the rear on lap 27 for speeding, and on lap 88 he was leading. That's how fast Truex was, and no one's talking about that. I think that there could be some value on Truex, you know, coming down the stretch here, but, you know, to your point, he would be someone that's in contention in this playoffs for sure. Him and Bubba have speed, and, you know, they just, at least the 19 team, they can't get out of their own way. You know, they have similar issues as the 18 and the 11 at times. So, but man, I'll tell you what, this car is, you know, you have loose wheels, more loose wheels than I've ever seen, and you only have one lug nut. So, man, anything can happen in these races, and especially here at Bristol. If you make a mistake here, whew, you are going to be in deep trouble.
And I think we've seen that. Obviously, the field much more competitive than it's been in the past, so you have to try and squeeze everything you can out of these cars. And there's no better place than to pick up four or five positions in one fell swoop than on pit road. So you're looking at these pit stops. Guys are trying to save tenths of a second whenever possible, and getting on or off pit road, avoiding equipment issues, avoiding loose wheels that you mentioned, speeding penalties, everything else, as we see how important clean air is. And I think that contributes to the level of pressure that comes down to some of these pit stops. And Bristol, to your point, you make a mistake here, it's real easy to get shuffled back. And we know that this is a track where we're going to see plenty of yellow flags throughout the course of the evening, and you want to avoid the big wreck that's out there. Last but not least, with the one to go in stage two, I have to ask you about Kevin Harvick and the approach that you would take with the four if you wanted to make him part of your betting equation this weekend. Would you approach it more in the outright market at a price in the single digits to win at Bristol? Or if you feel that's going to be the case, you'd put a little bit on his odds to win the playoffs as well, knowing that that number has drifted out 25, even 30 to 1 at some shops if you look around the market.
Yeah, you got to look for payouts here with Harvick. I will not be excited about playing him in matchups, not even close, because here's the deal. If everyone's saying he's going to run well because he has to win, first of all, we all know that's not a thing, right? he's trying to win every week. It just gets a little different here in the playoffs. And you know what? Maybe they take two tires, or maybe there's a strategy. I don't see that there being a strategy from a team perspective that will put him in a position to win the race. You know, maybe staying out with old tires, but that's just not going to work. I think it's going to have to be Kevin Harvick behind the wheel. I think he's going to be aggressive. So make sure, if you find yourself betting the four this week, that you're getting paid properly. I would not be laying any juice on him against in any matchups or a top 10 for that matter. I know there's a lot of people out there that like him top 10, and he moved to like minus 300 top 10. Okay, that's a terrible price. I almost swore right there. That's how mad I was. I almost drop the F-bomb there, because that's a terrible price. Do not play Kevin Harvick minus 300 for a top 10. And by the way, the sportsbook that has that should offer an against price. If you're going to make it that minus 300 on a guy that, what's 10 to 1 to win, I have a problem with that.
No, go ahead. I want you to finish your thought, and I'm going to follow up there with, you know, the NASCAR betting markets in general.
Yeah, so I just think that... You make sure you're getting paid properly if you're going to play Kevin Harvick this week. And I think that that means maybe a top three or win prices. I wouldn't get... And now, I could be wrong. I'm just telling you, my theory is you want to make sure that you're going to get the risk-reward that you're going to have on a guy that has to win. If it's three wide with four to go, or, you know, and he tries to force something in there and he wrecks, well... Okay, you had him to win. He might not have won anyway, but you're going to be really pissed off if you played him top five and he wrecked, or you had him in a matchup against a guy that was running 18th. You're just not going to get paid properly on those. So make sure you pay attention to that when a guy's in a must-win scenario.
It is the definition of boom or bust when you get into these elimination races, and we'll see it here. We'll see it again in the next phase of the playoffs, and we'll see it in Martinsville before we know the final four headed to Phoenix to vie for the championship. And you raise an interesting point. I think as the NASCAR markets continue to evolve, I'd love to see yes, no prices on all of those things for top 10s. If you want to offer something to happen, you should offer an against price. And the other thing I would like to see markets for any of the operators that are out there listening, trying to figure out how to increase their NASCAR handle, two advance prices for every single round of the playoffs. Let's see yes, no's for three races. I think it'd be a fun way to get people involved. Obviously, you're not going to look to lay massive prices on the favorites, but at the same time, for some of those cars that are hanging right around the cut line, it'll give you an opportunity to elicit a little bit more betting interest, not just in a head-to-head matchup that's good for one race. As we always do around here, before we officially move on to stage three and a breakdown for this weekend's race at Bristol, it's all about on-track activities. And as we said, the truck race already completed last night on Thursday by the time you're listening to this podcast. So we'll focus on Friday, where the Xfinity cars will get out there for practice at 2:35 Eastern. You can see that on NBC Sports app. That's followed by Xfinity qualifying at 3:10 also on the NBC Sports app. Once that wraps up, we'll see the big boys on track. Cup practice kicks off in earnest, 4:35 on USA Network, followed up by Cup qualifying at 5:20 Eastern on USA. And last but not least, under the lights Friday, the Xfinity Food City 300 available on USA. And again, one of the best races of the season that we'll see under the bright lights at Bristol, Thunder Valley, whatever you want to call it, the Cup Race. It's the Bass Pro Shops night race on USA, 7:30 Eastern Saturday night. You can watch that adjacent to any college football action that you may be sweating. Stage three, breaking down Bristol, and we can kick things off with the track specs here. Just over a half mile, we're talking about 22 to 24 degree banking, concrete racing surface, stage lengths for Saturday night, 125 stage one, 125 stage two, and 250 laps for stage three. Last year's fall race, Worm saw Kyle Larson, Ryan Blaney, Denny Hamlin, and Chase Elliott all spend significant time out front leading the race. Chevy, just their third win the last 16 races in Bristol when the five got to victory lane a season ago. And when you look at the last four Bristol concrete winners, well, they've all started in the top five, six of the last seven inside the top 10. Three of the last four Bristol races have seen a real long green flag stretch to close things out. We'll see if that carries through. And as I always ask before we get into some of the drivers and what to look for, when you're doing your handicapping, which tracks are you factoring into the equation for comps to Bristol?
You know, that's great that you sent me over this kind of itinerary of things we'd like to go over, and you left it blank on the track comps. And you know what? So did I. I think that this is one of the very unknowns that we're going to have this season. I mean, this is the first time we're technically seeing, true Bristol. And you can make the comparisons on concrete, but there's just nothing like Bristol, baby. I mean, there just isn't. So, try to take everything with a little bit of a grain of salt. I think it's really important that you understand the track history, just guys that get around there well. And I don't care what car it is. It could be the car tomorrow when Kyle Busch was dominant, or it could be anything. I don't care what car it is. Kyle Busch is going to be good. He just knows how to get around that track. So for me, when I'm looking at, comparable tracks, you could maybe look at Dover, because I do think that diamond line is kind of the fastest. If you look at that, I think Larson's probably the best at that. But, I would not take much from Nashville. And you know what? Old golden boy Chase Elliott obviously won at the two other concrete tracks that we went to this year. So, of course, everyone's pounding him. I don't know that that's it. Well, he's also good here. So I just don't think that those two tracks on concrete are more important than track history. So right now I'm paying attention more to track history and current form than I am track comparisons.
Hey, it's always good. I mean, sometimes it's not apples to apples, so you don't want to try and make a bigger deal about something that's not going to provide any predictive value when you're looking at this race coming up. Obviously, we place a ton of emphasis on practice and qualifying in terms of how we handicap, and if there aren't data points that you can lean on, then so be it. Every race weekend is created differently. When you begin to look at the odds board for this weekend's race at Bristol, you see a laundry list of drivers that can all be considered favorites, co-favorites. I mean, at last check, you essentially had six drivers, depending on the book, or five, all priced in that single digits. Denny Hamlin, the favorite, a lot of shops at 6.5 to 1, upwards of 9. And that group includes Hamlin, a pair of his teammates in Christopher Bell and Kyle Busch, and of course the HMS drivers in the 5 and 9, that being Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott. The floor is yours, my friend. Whichever favorite you want to talk about, we can hit on a number of these drivers, but I want to try and be able to cover as much real estate as we possibly can.
Well, let's talk about Kyle Busch first. I think that makes the most sense. Listen, he's won here 8 times and he knows how to pass cars. The issue with Kyle Busch is, you know, relative to the mistakes that he's made, relative to the mistakes that other Gibbs drivers have made, which would be, you know, the Chris Bells and Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch has actually spun out or hurt his car every time he makes a mistake. So not all of these mistakes are the same. And when Denny Hamlin makes a mistake, it's usually a pit road violation or, you know, some sort of penalty. When it's Kyle, he's spinning out and he's doing a little bit of damage to his car. Not to mention the tail end of the lead lap is very different than being the reason the caution came out. You're more likely to go a lap down. So not all mistakes are the same here. And Kyle Busch has made a ton of them this year. And he's had a hard time recovering because they are in some sort of spin versus, you know, just speeding on pit road. But he's still Kyle Busch. This is still Bristol Night Race. And he's going to be good. I mean, that's no secret. Now, can he pull out the win? Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd rather see practice and qualifying before I say, hey, you know, who the best Toyota is going to be. And you know what? Toyotas haven't been great on short tracks. You know, I know that we had some, Bell won it, Loudon, which is a short track, but this is just so different than every other track. It could be that another manufacturer unloads better. So, although I do like Kyle Busch, and I'm never going to talk anybody out of betting him at Bristol, I just think right now, let's just wait and see what happens. I don't think he's going to put it on the pole or qualify in the top three. That just hasn't been his thing this year. He's going to qualify, you know, probably 8th to 13th would be my guess. And I think you'll probably see, I don't think you'll see a lower number on Kyle going into the race.
Well, we may as well go from one Kyle to the next. So that would be a opportunity to talk about Kyle Larson. This time last year, he already had 5 wins under his belt. You talked about it earlier in the show about how he just seems to be a little bit off. He, of course, won this race a season ago for the first time in his career, led 175 laps, 35% of the race, and was able to generate a driver rating of 142. The problem for the 5, much like some of the Toyotas, the best short track finish this season for him has been 5th, but he's being priced as an elite driver. Is there an opportunity to fade the 5 going in on pre-week stuff, or is he one, much like Kyle Busch, it's the wait-and-see approach?
I ain't fading the 5. Listen, this is a track where, you know, certain drivers just know how to get around. And I think that's why we're talking about Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott. Those guys are consistently successful at this track. And there's something about the line that Kyle Larson runs that's just different than everyone else. And I don't know if it's just dirt trackers in general or if this is specific to Larson, but he makes his way through traffic better than anyone else. He is not afraid to paint that white line. Well, I guess there's not a white line here at Bristol, but or he's not afraid to run the top. He'll go wherever he has to go to make passes. And, you know, if you watch Kansas last week, you had to be good on both the bottom and the top. And I think that that's kind of been the story for the season. So I do think that Kyle Larson will be good. You know, he hasn't had kind of that race winning speed, or he hasn't dominated like he has in the past. So I don't know that 7-1 win price, I'm going to wait on that a little bit. I'd rather see practice and qualifying, but he's certainly going to be there. He's going to hang around the top 5 all day. And if they can, you know, adjust on this car properly and make some good changes, he could easily win this race.
Chase Elliott came into the postseason with the number 1 overall seed. He had built himself quite a margin for error. He now sits at 7th in the playoff grid. 4 wins this year, but current form, as we mentioned earlier, isn't great. 3 straight finishes outside the top 11. He is winless at Bristol during his career, finished 25th in this very race a season ago. All that being said, he still owns 3 top 5s in his last 4 short track races on the season. And I feel for a driver as talented as the 9, it is just a matter of time before he's able to grab that life-size sword that he can add to the trophy case.
Elliott, I mean, this is a perfect racetrack for him. You know, he has a good history here. He easily could have won the race last year. Instead, he helped his teammate win it by blocking Harvick a little bit. Listen, you can't make mistakes at this track. You know, if you go to the rear, it is really hard. That's why you saw those stats that you talked about early on in this stage had everything to do with, you know, where people start. That's because there's so much trouble you can find at this track. So if you don't make mistakes, you have a really good chance at winning this race if you have speed in your race car. Well, surprise, Hendrick Motorsports has speed in the race car, and Elliott has made the least amount of mistakes of anybody all year. So, not to mention, if I'm not saying that because he won at two other concrete tracks that that's a reason to bet him. I feel like that's just a justification for a lot of people betting him. However, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. So, again, I don't know out of these group of drivers that are right around that 7-1 area. I guess we can throw Chris Bell in there. Like, who's going to be the best? I think that Chris Bell will be the most consistent, and I could see Kyle Busch leading a lot of laps, Kyle Larson leading a lot of laps. You know, Denny Hamlin could lead a lot of laps. It's going to be something where a couple of these guys are going to look better or have an adjustable car that can find victory lane, and the other ones are going to be, you know, maybe a step or two behind. I don't know who that is quite yet.
I mean, Bell is interesting because obviously we've seen a driver come of age this season. He hasn't exactly been lights out at Bristol. 22nd average finish at Bristol under the current setup since he joined the Cup Series, but he has been very good at short tracks. You referenced the win at New Hampshire earlier this year at Loudon, and you look at what he's done. He's got four top eight finishes over his last five races, finished 36th at Daytona, but we throw that out as super speedway. So there are enough data points to get excited about, but track history doesn't support this price. So it's always fascinating to see how these drivers are dealt with in terms of the betting markets and, more importantly, how they're priced. From the favorites onto the value section of the program, and Worm, I talked to you a little bit about these two drivers before we get started, and in my opinion, they both come from this, well, they not my opinion, they do come from the same race team, but they almost feel like they're completely discounted for what some of the expectations are this weekend, and that would be Ryan Blaney and Joey Logano, both widely available at 12-1. If you shop around, I have seen some 15s on Joey instead. And Ryan Blaney, second career top five here last fall. He's had pretty good short track performance this season, has led at least 47 laps in five of his previous seven Bristol starts, including three of which being over 100 laps led at that. Meanwhile, Joey Logano, seven top tens in his last 12 starts here, four top eights on short tracks this season, and he has been the model of consistency as I check my numbers here to make sure I'm looking at the right car, something that you couldn't do last week. And yep, the 22 has been very good wherever we've gone. How do you assess Team Penske, those two drivers specifically? I'm not discussing Austin Cindric in the same bucket.
Yeah, no need to discuss Cindric. Well, I think he kind of hit the nail on the head. I think that this is a track you feel like would fit Ryan Blaney. You know, a momentum track where you can kind of get in a rhythm, and it's fast track. I know it's considered a short track, but it's a fast one. And I think that Blaney, you know, where he will struggle is we've always seen him struggle, at least this year, passing cars. And remember, you're going to be in lap traffic really quickly here if you're the leader. So you better search for multiple lines. And I don't think that really sets up for Ryan Blaney. But I do think we did see some speed from him last week. At times he was, you know, the fastest car at Kansas. It's been a while since we've said that about the 12 car. So I think that there is a little bit of value on him in that 12 to 15 to 1 range. I actually, you know, I just made some notes that he might be a nice matchup guy, you know, where he knows that this is might not be his bread and butter track, but if he can get a good finish here, it could really set him up for, you know, a solid start to the round of 12. Joey Logano, on the other hand, you know, my notes say, well, he's just doing Joey Logano things, you know, just taking cars that maybe don't have the speed that some of the other cars around him have that he qualifies. Obviously he's qualified great these last couple of weeks, but man, he's really good at kind of hanging around, and I kind of expect him to do the same thing. I think if you're looking from an outright perspective, I do think that Logano, he has won here before and he's led a lot of laps here. I do think that this is probably the best outright price available if I had to pick. Just a little bit of value on him. You know, he could win, and you know, he's anywhere from 12 to 15 to 1 some places, and I fully expect him to race better or finish better than the car that he has, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense. I mean, here, to your point, I mean, a couple of things at Bristol for folks that have never watched at this track before, you have to be able to keep track position. You have to be able to pass. You have to be able to block, because lap traffic plays a massive role in everything that goes on. And the first time I watched at Bristol, I don't know if it was you or somebody else that best described watching racing here as basically NASCAR in a blender, is how fast these guys get spun around and how quickly things can go from being in a very good spot to things being a lot more treacherous if you get stuck behind a slow car and you're not able to identify your line. One other value driver I want to bring up, only because he's starting to regain some of his form that we saw early in the year. He had gone 10 straight races without a top 10 finish, but now he's put together back-to-back top 10s. That would be William Byron. And Byron's obviously current form suggests that this is a guy that no one was talking about coming into the playoffs. Early in the year, we thought, hey, look, maybe he could have the kind of impact that we think Christopher Bell was going to. When you're talking about Byron, he won at Martinsville this spring. It's not a track comp. I'm not saying that by any stretch. But two top eights in his last three trips here. Do we feel that Byron could be a guy that we're talking about with 10 to go having a chance to win this race?
I don't know about winning the race. I think that he'll be a solid, I think he is looking for a solid run. You know, I think that the last couple of weeks they've proved that they have speed in their race car and that they can go out there and compete with guys in lead laps. I think that that's something that's important to that team that has disappeared in some races earlier in the year, or kind of that mid part of the season where it's like, I wonder which 24 car is going to unload. Is it going to be the one that rides around in 15th all day, or the one that rides around the top four? And so I think right now they kind of have that top four speed. Again, you know, not Byron's best track, but you know, to finish third in this race last year, I think had to be you know, kind of a, you know, a positive for him. And I think he, you know, could present, if he unloads well, some opportunities for some matchups. Like I said, I don't know that William Byron wins the race. And of course, now that I say that, I feel like I should bet him because everything I've said has just gone opposite. So I don't know. If you want to fade me, take Byron, just because I said I didn't think he could win. But I do think he'll kind of he'll have a solid finish. That's kind of what I expect out of that car this weekend.
All right, last but not least, I have to ask you, given what we've seen over the last 2 weeks, whether it's a long shot amongst the playoff drivers or somebody on the outside of the playoff picture, if you're keeping tabs on a couple of other drivers, who should you make us aware of? Not necessarily an endorsement to bet them in the outright market, but just some guys you wouldn't be shocked if they had race-winning cars and a chance to be inside the top 10 or maybe even the top 5 this weekend.
Well, I think every week, and maybe I'm biased towards Chase Briscoe, I think he's an amazing driver. And some of the stuff that he does, sometimes I'm just like shocked at his like incredible driving. And then other times I'm shocked at how he just doesn't show up. So I'm never shocked at Briscoe being good. I think that, you know, the fact you're going to be racing around cars and searching for different lines through lap traffic, I think it does benefit dirt track guys. And just because they're constantly doing that, you know, week in and week out when they're running in those dirt races. So I do think that that gives them a little bit of an advantage. They're not afraid to go from the top to the bottom to the top to the bottom and weave through traffic. So I do think Briscoe, it could be good. I like I said, I haven't played anything on him, but the other guy's Eric Jones, and I don't think that's any secret. Eric Jones has been very good here. He's shown some speed recently, and I'm a big Eric Jones fan. I think he definitely got a raw deal there at Gibbs, but you know, for him to get a win last week at, or you know, 2 weeks ago at Darlington, it showed some speed and then struggled a little bit late at Kansas, but I don't know. I don't know that the top 10 price at plus 180 is worth it at this point. But yeah, who knows? I mean, I also didn't think that he had a chance at winning at Darlington. And then, you know, five or six, you know, mistakes later, he's leading the race. And it's like, wow, he's going to win this thing. So those would be the two guys from a long shot perspective that I think actually could go up there and compete for the win. You know, you could look at other guys like an Austin Dillon, who seems to be kind of consistently between 10th and 15th at this track, or 11th to 15th here. That's more consistent. I don't know that that's necessarily race winning, where I do think that if you get the 14 in the right circumstance, or Eric Jones in the right circumstance, they could win the race.
I feel like the driver I've bet here probably more often than I should be willing to admit on this particular podcast would be Ricky Stenhouse at astronomical prices, looking for the 47 to be competitive. And obviously, he's been anything but over the last 15 or 20 races. He did have a stretch earlier this year where he put together four top 10s. Again, not endorsing 100-1. I don't think he's shown the ability to get that car where it needs to go. But that's probably the driver I've thrown away more crumbs on at this track than anybody else. So I'm curious to see how
he performs. But hey, dude, he was great last week. You know, until he had issues, I mean, he was really good. So, I mean, he drove up to the field with Truex, and he was fast last week. I mean, if there's a guy, I mean, I think that's a great point, Todd. I really do. Stenhouse, I mean, you look at his finishes, though. Ooh, man.
No, I'm looking at him right now. If I pull up my good old NASCAR heat map here, over the last 14 races, his average finish is outside the top 23. You have to go all the way back to a four-race stretch of Dover, Darlington, Kansas, and Charlotte, where he went second, eighth, eighth, and seventh. And since then, there have been more finishes outside the top 30 than there have been inside the top 15.
Yeah, he's been brutal, but he can get it done here. You know, it's all about how he unloads. If he unloads and, you know, the track conditions are right, you know, I don't remember him being great in the night race, and this is very unprepared. I know that he's been good in the day races here because usually those slicker tracks, you know, you have a little bit more sunlight on the track, and whenever things get slimy, the dirt trackers like Stenhouse tend to run a little bit better. I don't know that I've seen him be super competitive. And like I said, I don't have this prepared in the night race when, you know, things are a little bit tighter and a little bit faster. I haven't quite seen that out of him. So,
no,
but still, it's still 100-1 is still not bad.
Yeah, and again, not a driver that I'm telling people to run and bet, just one that I'm always interested to see, knowing he has had some level of success here in the past, and 100-1 suggests that he's got a 1% chance to win the race. I'm not sure it's significantly better than that, but I have to imagine if he shows a little bit in qualifying, he could be very popular for a lot of folks in DFS. We're going to wave the checkered flag as we put a bow on stage three. Want to remind all of you, our loyal Stay Green listeners, to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there, and more importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And as always, a reminder, we do post some Sunday head-to-head matchups. This week it will be on Saturday. I can't promise you what time that Worm and I will arrive at a best bet on race day, but that's why we tweet it out. So if you're following us, we share our audio clip. Want to remind you to go there, get the best of the number. Those things have moved fast, even in the case of last week's race where the number moved 60 cents and we didn't have a chance to get you to the window. But Worm, the silver lining, you gave out William Byron top 10. That was as easy as pie last weekend on this very podcast. So as far as a pre-week best bet opportunity, where are you steering our listeners now?
Well, this one I'm going to go with the top five, and that means that I'm probably going with a favorite. My best bet of the week is Kyle Larson top five at minus 110. I think that this is one of arguably Kyle Larson's best tracks. He was great here last year, and I think he's going to be really good. And if you want to nibble that win price, I think that he's going to be good all week. He's going to look great in practice, I promise you. He's going to look great in qualifying, I promise you. And whether or not he races well, that's been more of the issue. But I certainly think a top five guy, I can't see five guys finishing ahead of him this week. So that's it. Kyle Larson, top five, minus 110.
Look at that, a little HMS love. Let's hope Kyle Larson is able to put his five car right there in the thick of things and have a chance to win the race Saturday night as we get into the twilight hours. As always, want to thank all of you guys for tuning in. Two playoff races down. The math on that tells me there are eight to go, and we'll be with you every single step of the way. Worm, any other tidbits, parting shots, things you would like to share with our listeners before we bid them a fond farewell?
No, I like the way that this whole thing is setting up for Chris Bell. I still think that I haven't seen anything that's kind of talked me off of Chris Bell for this this playoff championship, and it'll be interesting to see how he manages this. Once we get through Bristol, I think that the next three races are going to be exciting. So not that Bristol won't be, but he's already through there. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the round of 12. So hopefully my boy Bell, that looks like he's about 8 years old, can bring home a championship for us.
Hey, there's no age restrictions on how old you have to be to take home the highest prize in NASCAR. So Christopher Bell obviously is the guy that we brought to the dance, and we're going to continue to be optimistic about his chances to get to Phoenix and let everything sort itself out there. Again, thank all of you guys, our loyal listeners. Enjoy the race festivities this weekend from Thunder Valley. And when it comes Saturday night, the Bristol night race with a Kyle Larson top five ticket in hand. We'll see you at the window.